Carol Singers, thought Joe. Good. Better than good. Perfect. That's what it was. Just the thing to set the scene. Molly would hear them too. It couldn't have been better if he'd ordained it himself. And not one of those modern carols either, like you hear in those songwriting competitions on the television. A proper carol, sung by children. It reminded him of Christmas cars with robins and holly berries, and horse-drawn coaches in the snow, where all the ladies wore fur muffs and bonnets and the men top hats. They used to have scenes like that in those big biscuit tins as well, but not anymore. Or did they? Come to think of it, he hadn't seen one of those biscuit tins since, oh, not for a long time now. So perhaps they still had them. Joe turned away from the window and then scanned the room as if searching for an intruder. It was empty and familiar. But he still felt spied upon and vaguely guilty. Her picture grinned at him from atop the mantelpiece, and he fancied she was shaking her head at him, saying, "Go on with that, you old idiot. You'll never grow up." 10:30. Time to prepare. Or to abandon his plan. To grow up. Do or die time. Do then. The other would come in its own time, not in his. Joe opened the living room door and stepped out into the hall. The draft cooled him like a sobering thought. Perhaps he was crazy after all. "Never mind," she replied, "what they think." In the bedroom, he switched on the light and closed the curtains on the night. Not that anyone could actually see in. The cottages were built well back from the road, and trees lined the rear. Sleepy Hollow, people called the row of four pensioners' bungalows. Joe liked that. Sleepy Hollow. It had a nice, kind of peaceful feeling to it. Molly hated it, he knew. Said it reminded her of headless horsemen and the like, and that she could do without, thank you very much. There were enough brainless folk about as it was, mentioning no names and not looking at any of the other cottages in particular. Joe smiled as he recalled the occasion. He sitting in her living room, holding the nameplate he had just carved, and she pouring the tea. She told him the name was silly, but that she'd no real objection if he wanted to stick it up at the end of the row. But Joe didn't stick it up. There and then, he bent across the hearth and lodged the piece of wood firmly amidst the burning coals. Then he sat back on the sofa and smiled at her. He hadn't done that in a fit of pique or anything like that. It was just, well, just as sure that it wasn't important, that he didn't care one way or the other. She had stared at him in wonder for a full minute, and then said, "You really are an idiot, Joe Bryson." Just as his wife would have said it. Only Molly didn't laugh at the same time. She would tonight, though. She was bound to. Joe opened the wardrobe door and reached into the corner, his fingers probing for the slippery satin feel of the costume. The smell of ancient mothballs made him suddenly sad. Good, thought Joe. Still sane. He clutched the hanger he was seeking and hauled it through the ruck of cardigans and overcoats that marked his previous Christmases. Now, the red satin shimmered foolishly in the light, reminding him, as it always did, of a Spanish painting he had once seen. He draped the outfit over the bed and then knelt on the floor. Pressing his ear to the mattress as if listening to the springs, he reached as far as he could under the bed. He found the corner of a flat box and drew it towards him. Slipping the lid off, he parted the tissue paper and looked inside, nodding at each item as he checked it off.
Carol Singers, thought Molly. Good God, was there no end to it, and not a tune between them. Well, they needn't knock at her door with their impertinent demands and expect a welcome. Anyway, as like as not they were on one of those employment schemes, apprentice do-gooders or some such. Well, they would earn their money out in a night like that, when any half-sensible body was home in bed. Speaking of which, it was time she made a move in that direction. Not that she would sleep very much. She never did these days. But she was a great believer in ritual and sticking to well-worn paths. And so she would go in the moment now and lie in the dark and listen and wait for death and pray. Pray like the silly old woman she was. Oh, God, leave me dignity. Leave me that at least. Let me keep my wits and powers of reason. Take beauty and pleasure and joy, what's left of it. But leave me irony. Let me not be demented and drooling and soft, like some others round here. I won't name for fear of offending your sensibilities. Please, make an exception in my case. In a moment she would go. First, she would steep the peas, another ritual. She had thought of inviting one of the neighbors in to join her in civilized celebration, for form's sake. But then she had thought of old Tom Johnson's shouted responses to questions he hadn't heard, and of the smell of his disgusting pipe. Of Miss Kincaid and her endless, nervous, twittering devotion to her stupid cats. Molly had always resented the way everyone called her Miss Kincaid, and called herself Molly. And then there was Joe Bryson. She didn't know what to make of him. A strange sort of character, always pottering about his pigeon shed or going for long walks in all weathers, or simply standing in his back garden, staring at the trees. She thought him a bit mad, senile probably. Missed his wife badly, she'd been told. She remembered the day he had burned that silly street sign and grinned at her like some woodland elf. Definitely fruit and nut. Handle with care. So, a solitary Christmas it would be, as usual. Molly went to the kitchen and switched the kettle on. The peas rattled into the little pot, followed by the white tablet to make them bacon fat. She would lie in bed and think of the peas growing all through the night. As Molly turned the kettle off, she heard a donkey bray. There it was again. A donkey, for sure. Praying in Sleepy Hollow on Christmas Eve. With a rising sense of dread, Molly returned to the living room to peep through the curtains.
Joe was beginning to think now that borrowing the donkey hadn't been such a good idea after all.
Come on, owl hand. It's only three doors. You'll be back in your pigeon shed before you know it. Easy now, boy.
It was the costume, perhaps. The donkey didn't recognize him in a Santa outfit.
Shh. Easy there. Easy, boy. For God's sake, shut up or you'll give the game away before we start. Look, it's only me. Joe.
Joe couldn't tell whether the donkey's eyes widened in recognition or abject terror. Either way, he seemed to be settling down. He stood patiently as Joe fitted the crude harness of the handcart, which he had painted red the night before. Good. Now for the finishing touch. He went back into the pigeon shed and emerged a minute later, carrying what looked like a handful of sturdy twigs.
Easy now, boy. Easy does it. That's it. Just going to put this over your head. There now. Now all I have to do is... Easy, boy. Tie this underneath. Right. Like that. There now. Finished.
Joe stood back and surveyed his handiwork in the gloom. A smile spread across his face. It didn't look remotely like a reindeer pulling a sleigh. He chuckled at the absurdity of it when the donkey glared accusingly at him.
Don't worry, boy. You don't look any worse than I do. Anyway, it's all for a good cause. Now, just hold your horses there another minute till I get the sack. Wouldn't be much point in going without the sack, would there? No, sir.
Joe stepped across the yard and went up the steps into his back porch. He bent to pick up the sack, and as he straightened up, he caught a glimpse of his reflection in the glass of the kitchen door. Something suddenly struck him as incongruous. It wasn't just the huge white beard, nor the faintly glowing red satin cap, nor the bulging coal sack in his white-gloved hands. It was the look of earnest application on his face. The careful toil of magic. Of madness, perhaps. But no, it didn't disturb him. It reassured him. For it must have been like that originally, with the first Santa Claus, the real one, St. Nicholas, wasn't it? He wasn't magic, nor mad. He must have felt the cold, struggled with sacks, and risked the ridicule, the charge of madness. What was the difference, then, between the actual labor of love and the futile fumblings of madmen? Both practiced an obsession. And then he knew. Love had a witness, a supporter, someone he knew and understood. And suddenly loneliness threatened to overwhelm him.
Come on, Rudolph. Let's be about our business. I can always say it was your idea. Oh, oh, oh.
Joe gently tugged the donkey's halter and led him round the front of Sleepy Hollow.
For fully 5 minutes now, Molly had stood at the window, the corner of the curtain bunched in her right hand, her forehead almost touching the cold pane. She had abandoned her search for the donkey after the first 30 seconds. It was now standing outside, she fancied, on the grass verge, watching a lonely old woman staring from the lighted windows of a lonely old house. She saw herself clearly in the dark. Molly. A private woman. Quiet. Kept herself to herself. A clever woman, too, by all accounts. Used to be a schoolteacher. Never married. Sharp with the tongue, they say. Very alert for her age, they say. So what is she doing, staring out the window in the middle of the night looking for a donkey? Waiting for Santa Claus, perhaps. Molly sighed and was just about to close the curtain when a movement in the street entered her field of vision. Sweet God Almighty, what was that? In slow motion, Molly saw herself closing the curtain and turning back into the room. She walked straight into the kitchen and began to pour the water over the peas. She noticed her hand was trembling. It was natural excitement, she told herself. After all, she had just seen Santa Claus arriving at old Tom Johnson's door, and he had a reindeer with him.
Whoa, boy! Whoa!
Joe halted the donkey outside the first cottage, reached into the sack, and found the smallest parcel. Old Tom's. Looking along the row, he noticed that each window was lighted. Good. His timing was in. None abed just yet. Molly's was furthest away. Just let her stay up a little while longer. Right. The moment of truth had arrived. It was now or never. Taking a deep breath, Joe knocked loudly at the door.
Yes? Hello? Who's that? Merry Christmas, Tom. It's Santa Claus. Ho, ho, ho.
Oh, I doubt you have the wrong house, mister. I know nothing about it.
Come on, Tom. Now, how could Santa Claus get the wrong house?
Eh? What's that?
I said... Never mind. I've brought you a present, so I have. Here you are. Merry Christmas.
Is that for me?
I thought it was time you had a new one. Open it and see.
Eh? Can open it?
Aye.
Well, now, isn't that lovely? A new thing. A good one, too. Man, that's great. Are you from the Meals on Wheels crowd?
No.
Joe was slightly surprised that Tom still hadn't recognized him. Should he tell him?
You're not from the community hall, are you?
No. I'm Santa Claus. I'm real. That's an odd looking reindeer you have there. You're right there. He doesn't like the night shift. But he's bearing up well.
In fact, he's bearing up very well, thought Joe. The donkey was standing up very straight, and you could see the rope that held the antlers on only if you looked very carefully.
Well, could I offer you a cup of tea or something? It's a bitter night.
No, thanks all the same. I've a few more calls to make before the night's over, so I'll be heading on. Merry Christmas, Tom.
Have a Merry Christmas to you, too. Oh, and thanks for the pipe. Mind yourself. It looks like snow starting.
It was indeed beginning to snow. The air had turned icy and then solid with silent flakes. Joe had never known snow so thick or so sudden. He turned and waved at old Tom, who was still standing at his open door. They could barely see each other. Joe toyed with the idea of going back and telling him who he really was, but just then Tom stepped back and closed the door. Joe smiled and gently tugged the halter. He felt good. No matter how the other two turned out, it would have been worthwhile. They moved on over the carpet of white.
It was the carol singers, of course. Why hadn't she realized that immediately? They had this Santa character in tow collecting money, and the silly fool had become separated. Face it, Molly, she told herself. You're becoming a timid, fluttering, feeble-minded creature, ducking away from the window in nervous fright just because some clown in a Santa suit was making his rounds. Molly strode to the window and boldly pulled the curtain back. What she saw startled her. Everything was suddenly white. The garden, the bushes, what she could see of the trees, all covered in snow. And it fell so thickly. Yet not 5 minutes ago. Had it really only been 5 minutes? Never mind. It was here now. Something else caught her attention then. Through the snow, she could just about make out a large dim shape outside Miss Kincaid's garden. It must be the Santa fool, of course, with his reindeer, or whatever it really was. She knew that. What disturbed her slightly, though she couldn't say why, was the faint red glow that seemed to emanate from them and tinge the falling flakes with pink.
2 steps took Joe up the path to Miss Kincaid's door. This time he didn't hesitate, but rapped the knocker smartly right away. He noticed his red sleeve had a thick icing of snow. But he didn't feel cold at all. Strange, that. He wouldn't have long to wait here. Miss Kincaid was always alert, ever an ear cocked for the slightest rustling in Sleepy Hollow. He was sure that she'd heard all the goings-on outside old Tom's house. As if to prove his point, the door slid silently open, and Miss Kincaid stood there, smiling from ear to ear.
Oh, Merry Christmas. Do come in and have a glass of sherry. I have it poured already. I've been expecting you.
Thank you, Miss Kincaid. That's very kind of you. I'll just go and get your present first. Ah, yes. This is it. Whoa. Steady, boy. Here you are, Miss Kincaid.
Thank you very much. Now, do come in. Will your reindeer be all right on his own for a little while? I won't detain you very long. I know how busy you must be.
Oh, I think he'll be happy enough for a minute or two.
On saying that, Joe looked round at the donkey just as he entered the doorway. He laughed in wonder. Do you know, in that light and through the snow, the donkey appeared every inch a reindeer, antlers and all. He followed her into the living room, where the fire blazed brightly in the hearth. In front of it, apparently fast asleep, was curled Lucifer, her cat. Over on the mantelpiece, on a little silver tray, sat 2 glasses of sherry. Miss Kincaid lifted the tray carefully and extended it to Joe.
Ah, lovely. Thank you very much, Miss Kincaid.
May I open the present now? I know I shouldn't really. Not till the morning, let it.
Oh, do. Please do. I hope you'll like it.
Now, isn't that pretty? And just what he needed. A new feeding bowl. Oh, and look. It's got his name on it. He will be pleased. Thank you so much.
Joe was pleased. He wasn't sure whether it was because he was in reckless mood or because he didn't like to leave the donkey outside on his own, but he suddenly tilted his head back and downed the sherry in 1 gulp.
My goodness, you must have been thirsty. Won't you have another?
No. Thanks all the same. I have to keep a clear head. I am driving, don't forget. I know. No, that was just the ticket. Thank you very much.
Of course, and I won't keep you back any longer. I think this is wonderful work you do. Have you done the others in the street yet?
Well, I've just come from Tom's house. And I'm just popping next door now to see Molly.
Oh, you won't forget Mr. Bryson, will you? He's very fond of Lucifer, you know.
Jo was staggered. She hadn't recognized him either. Not even from his voice. Nor did he feel the slightest inclination to tell her, strangely enough.
No, I won't forget Mr. Bryson. Don't worry. I'm leaving him to the last. Ah, well, I must be on my way now. Well, bye-bye now, and Merry Christmas.
And Merry Christmas to you, too. Goodness, such a lot of snow. Goodbye now.
That old bat has brought him into the house, thought Molly. Have these people got no scruples, preying upon the gullible and the foolish on such a night as this, too? Well, he needn't think he's going to get in here, the cheek of it all, thrusting this embarrassing facade of goodwill on people who neither want it nor need it, just because they're old. Well, old I may be, but I'm quite sure I'm not going to allow some loudmouthed clown to patronize me on my own doorstep. I won't even answer the door. Why should I? I don't want to. Molly shivered. It was cold. The strength of her own feeling alarmed her. She could hear him departing next door. A shocking thought suddenly struck her. What if he didn't go away? What if he presumed with the arrogance of the well-intended that he could burst his way in whether she answered or not? He might be one of those hypothermia detectives. Molly's mind raced around the house. The back door was shut and bolted, as was the front door. All the windows were closed and tightly locked, even the fanlight. She looked at the fireplace. The fire was nearly out. Well, if he could get down the chimney, he really was supernatural, and there was nothing she could do about it. Get a grip on yourself, Molly. Grown men coming down the chimney. Just then, Molly became aware of a bright red glow that seemed to pulsate from the bottom of her garden. She dashed across the room, flicked off the light, and stood against the door, not daring to breathe.
Last port of call, thought Jo, and just as well, too. That sherry had really gone to his head, and everywhere else in his body, for that matter. He felt warm and tingly all over. Burbling chuckles kept spilling over out of his mouth, and he had his urge to erupt in a huge bellow of shouted laughter. He shouldn't have drunk it so fast. He smiled at Rudolph, and he fancied that Rudolph smiled back at him. Trick of the snow and this red light, of course, wherever it was coming from. Just as Joe was about to enter Molly's path, the lights went out. Drat, thought Joe. That's where all your dallying has got you. Should he knock anyway? He looked back at Rudolph through the pink snow. Rudolph seemed to shake his head. Perhaps you're right, thought Joe. No need, anyway. He stepped back to the cart and took out the remaining parcel. He tore off the wrapping paper and held aloft the object within. Yes, it was a fine piece of work.
Where was he? Molly asked herself. Why doesn't he knock or go away? She still stood with her back to the door, and she could see the red glow that seeped in through the curtains and suffused the entire room. She heard footsteps going back down the path. Silence. And then footsteps returning. He seemed to be scrabbling at the wall, and then... What on earth was the man doing? Trying to break down the wall? Another one. The man was mad. Should she call for help? That was it. She was definitely going out to him. Molly pushed herself away from the door and reached from the handle. Then she stopped. She heard his footsteps shuffling back down the path. She glanced over at the window and could see clearly that the red glow was moving off back down the row of cottages. She stood, breathing deeply for several minutes, listening to the silence. She became calm. Eventually, Eventually, curiosity got the better of her. She drew back the bolt and turned the latch in the door and opened it. It had stopped snowing. White gleamed out of the darkness. She stepped outside, switching on her porch light, and looked at the wall beside the door. And there, gleaming against the brick, was a beautiful hand-carved, painted wooden sign, a nameplate. It read, Miss M. Smith, 1 Glen Cottages. Molly stared at the nameplate for a long time in the silence. She traced with her eyes the line of lettering that had been inscribed with loving care. And remembered another sign, another day. Her eyes filled with tears.
Joe lay in bed, still awake, smiling to himself. Don't forget Mr. Brayson, he chuckled. Mr. Brayson had done all right, thank you very much. Even Rudolph seemed to have enjoyed it in the end. He wondered again if he should have told them. But no. Better as it was. He didn't want thanks. Then he heard a noise at the door. Not a knock, really. What was it? The wind? But there was no wind. It couldn't have been a postman, surely. No, not at this time of night. But it had sounded like a letterbox. Joe slid out of bed and padded across the bedroom floor, wincing at the cold. He stepped into the hall and switched on the light. There, lying on the mat inside the door, was an envelope of delicate blue. Neatly written on the front was, Father Christmas, 4 Sleepy Hollow. A smile of delight took over Joe's face. He opened it.
Dear Joe, forgive me both for my rudeness and for the lateness of this invitation. It would give me great pleasure to have you as my guest for Christmas dinner tomorrow. Please come at 2 o'clock. Molly.
Joe folded the letter carefully. He had a witness.
A Christmas Story was written by Joe Mahon. Joe Gormley played the parts of Joe and Old Tom, and Sheila McGibbon played Miss Kincaid. The narration was by Maureen Gallagher and Joe Mahon, and the programme was produced and directed in our Radio Foyle studio in Londonderry by Maureen Gallagher.